jumping over 5 and 6, and we're going to 7. We'll talk about 5 and 6 in a minute, and what we think you can do with that. But we hope that the last session gave you some tools for healing hurts, and thus emptying more of the negative emotions in your cup. You obviously notice that we ask you to think of a way you hurt your spouse. We didn't ask you to ask your spouse, how did I hurt you? Which, was very intentional that it was done that way. A good question to ask your spouse, if you're really courageous, is, I really would like to know other ways I've hurt you that we have healed. So if there's any other, after this week, when you go back, if there's other ways that you know you hurt your spouse, just don't wait for them to say anything about it. Just say something like, back at Bow Ranch, I got a chance to tell you about one way that I could hurt you. I know there's more than one way that I've hurt you, and I would just like to confess another 1, 2, 20, 30. But when you're done with the ones you know of, have the courage to just say, I really would like to know other ways I've hurt you that I didn't think of. Because I know that just like the way Stacy brought that up, I would have never, ever brought that up. Because it happened so far in the past and it was out of my radar. So, have the courage to ask that. But let's say that your spouse doesn't ask you that question. I just wanted to encourage you that it is, it's okay to bring up, it's not only okay, but it's good for you to bring up ways that you've been hurt that they didn't think about, that they didn't bring up. Just want to make sure that, you use some of the wisdom and the tools that we've tried to help you with this week, whenever you do that, so that, you don't attack them and talk about how they are an idiot for what they did, but approach it from the standpoint of, when you did this, when you said this, when you did do this, it made me feel this way. And I would encourage you, because in most cases, there's an aloneness factor that goes into that. And so to the degree that that's part of it, then talk about the aloneness that you feel. But when you're trying to heal those hurts, do it from the standpoint of the needs, to the degree you can identify a need. I really felt like one time when Stacy and I were doing this, she said, I really, last weekend when our son spilled that orange juice in the kitchen, and I was trying to get you to help clean that up, and you kind of barked out, he can clean it up himself. I really felt disrespected in the way that came out, and I really felt like that Matt was hearing you talk to me in a way that I don't think we really want to model for Matt. And man, when she said that, because I understood the needs and how her treatment with her respect, is a valid, legitimate biblical need, that it just hurt my heart to know that she felt disrespected. And so, you know, when you're trying to heal these hurts, just don't spend all of your time trying to argue over the facts and say, well, that's not exactly what I said. You know what? It may not be exactly what you said. That's not the point. The point is that there's still that overarching need that got trampled on. And so just when you start arguing over the facts, just immediately think, okay, I need to stop making this about arguing over the facts and try and hear my partner's heart, hear what they felt and what they went through. I'm not saying the facts are totally irrelevant. It's just that our experience is 90% of the people spend all their time arguing over the facts, and then they just get to a point where they just say, I guess we're just going to have to agree to disagree. You know, because they can't get past the facts. You know, because you've heard a lot of direction of how you can and might biblically love your spouse at the point of these needs, it's very possible that you're like I was when I first heard this. Is that I just saw how flawed I was. I just saw how much I wasn't doing. I wasn't meeting her needs, and how much I was trampling on her needs. And it made me feel very flawed. And if you are feeling that way, I just want to remove a little bit of your aloneness in saying that, you know, the more that I have grown and walking with the Lord for over 40 years, the more I see the beauty of Jesus, the more flawed and sinful I feel. And I can honestly say I've never felt more human, more flawed, more sinful than I do now. And yet I'm probably arguably doing the best job I've ever done at loving Stacy. And yet, in the midst of that feeling more human or flawed, I have never in my life felt more loved by God than I do now. I have never felt more cared for. I've never felt more like I have a father that is passionately in love with me, that wants me to call him Daddy. So I hope that in the midst of you feeling flawed, you'll press into just how deeply loved you are. I want to say another thing, go one step deeper in this conversation about aloneness. Aloneness is intended to be removed by intimacy with God and intimacy with people. And we have largely talked this week about how to do that with and through people. God has three different kinds of people that he wants to use for that. It's your spouse if you're married, your family if you're not married, and then the body of Christ if you have no family. Or if your family is dysfunctional, it doesn't provide any aloneness help. And you can always look to the body of Christ, which is the beauty of this right here, and the stories that have been told, that just you guys are removing each other's aloneness in so many ways through this body, and it's beautiful. But you really don't want to just never let you down. People are going to let you down, but God is never going to let you down. That means he's going to give you exactly everything you want, but he's never going to let you down. You know, when I think about some of the key ways God removes my loves, just a handful of things that I wanted to share with you. Number one, when I sin now, I find that I've been able to, years ago, when I would sin, I would turn away from God, run away from God, I would pull back, I would distance myself, I would, through the shame of that, it caused me to be less intimate with God. And through the years, I have learned that when I sin, the most beautiful, powerful, helpful thing I can do is run toward God. Just like the prodigal son at the end of himself ran, came back, and the father was running toward him to embrace him. And when we sin, that's the heart of our Father. If you will just move toward him, he will run toward you. And your intimacy with him will grow and not decrease. I mentioned the book Gentle and Lowly, one of the best books I've read in the last 20 years. Really encourage you to read that and let the heart of God in that draw you to him. You know, one of the things that I've tried to discipline myself to do is just ask Jesus regularly, how do you feel toward me? How do you feel about me? And let him speak words over me of his heart, his gentle and lowly heart. And it's just incredible what it does to my heart. Another thing that I do to cultivate that intimacy with the Father, to remove aloneness, I did this morning in my quiet time as I was sitting outside, is I just listened to praise and worship music, and I want to commend a specific song to you. It's by the group Big Daddy Weed. It's called Overwhelmed. And I just encourage you to get that song, because it just really speaks to being overwhelmed by the love of God, overwhelmed and running into his arms. And so just encourage you to embrace some of those disciplines of just really letting the intimacy of the Father partner with the intimacy with people, which is so beautiful how that then enables us to live out the great commandment of loving God and loving people. And when we do, when we really love God and really love people, it removes our aloneness in a powerful way. So, what should you, could you do to, for some action steps going forward from here relative to this material? So, as I said, we have that chapter 5 and 6, so I would encourage you to read chapter 5, talk to your spouse, if you're married, read chapter 6, talk to your spouse. Then, make a note, there is in the appendix in the back, are several pages on sex. It's on page 53. We encourage you to read that and process that with your spouse if you're married. And then on page 56, there's several pages on how to have what's called a marriage team meeting. Because we need to have these ongoing conversations, healthy, productive, fruitful conversations, not just healing hurts. But that those practices in there give you some great ideas of how to have what we call a marriage team meeting. So encourage you to do that. We would encourage you to just grab one or two couples and go through this workbook. It's short enough, it's simple enough, it's straightforward enough. You know, don't worry about the fact that you don't feel qualified. Just go through it with one or two other couples, and I think you'll find that it will reinforce these things very well. How many of you have actually been to a Carl Elkins training or heard him? 5 or 10 of you? Yeah. So Carl, throughout COVID, he's a licensed professional counselor in Houston, been a friend of mine for 40 plus years, one of the best marriage counselors in Houston. And because of COVID, he put his marriage workshop on Zoom. So he's now doing it in a format of 3 half days, 6 hours on a Friday, 6 on a Saturday, 6 on a Sunday, which you can do it in your house in your pajamas. And I have a way to get you into that for free. So if you have an interest in doing that with Carl and to have a licensed professional counselor that's really good, let me know. I'll help get you to that. Lastly, we've mentioned that we're doing this 7-hour workshop of this on June 25th in northwest side of Houston. You're going to be getting an email in the next few days from Dale about that, and we're going to be doing those Saturday workshops, you know, 2-3 times a year, and you'll be notified anytime we're doing it. So feel free to come or bring a friend or send somebody. There's no cost to them, and so please take advantage of that. Okay, Stacy has a comment to make, a couple of comments, and then she's going to walk you through our closing exercise that I think you're going to really like. So, Stacy, take it.
Before that, I started learning some of this stuff. My focus focus with my kids was really on their problems. Because I was looking at their behavior. And I would see behavior that was unacceptable, or I would even project that behavior out 20 years and go, yeah, that's about it. But as I began to understand that they were both alone and fallen, my focus began to shift a little bit. This is a phrase that was so helpful for us. If someone spoke to us regarding these needs, they would say, look beneath the deed to the need. And that's probably not a new phrase, but it was as it relates to our child raising and our relationship with our kids, was looking beneath that deed to what could be the need that may be going unmet that could be stimulating that kind of behavior in my kid. And, I'm definitely very much all about a very consistent, loving, disciplined approach for the issues that are fallen related. But what I found over the years that a lot of the issues were a combination of both. And if we would think about, we're seeing this behavior, I'm just wondering, how have we been doing meeting this child's need for attention? How have I been doing leading my world and entering theirs? I've been really busy and I've been really stressed. I haven't really gotten a lot of me lately. Or how am I doing meeting this child's need for comfort? So those are some of the questions just to begin to ask yourself when you see behavior in your kids. Again, I'm not saying don't address behavior that needs to be taken care of, but just include that thought process. And I would also say, if you have young kids or if you have opportunity to pour into your grandkids, 10 needs are a lot to think about, especially if you've got multiple kids. So I would say, just focus on 3. That would be attention. That's you leading your role. When you do that, that affirms to that child that it's worth and value. That a big person wants to be in my world, that affirms their worth and value. Secondly, is comfort. Just hearing about the things they hear about. And I get it. A lot of things that little kids hear about are like super lame. But it's their whole world. It's their whole thing. And so sometimes we got to kind of bring ourselves in and say, well, this is stupid to me, but I know it's a big deal to you. So attention, comfort, and then affection. Just lavishing on those words and those hugs and things. I just want to share with you a quick example of how we saw this with our young kids. We were just learning this, and our son Matt was 4 at the time, and I'm just going to be straight up with you, he was a big foul winner. I mean, that was just his thing. Man, he whined about everything, and it's really grated on my nerves big time. And I tried other things to get him to stop it, like whooping him and like a timeout and taking stuff, all the things. We just kept doing it. So we were just learning this idea of comfort. And so we had gone to lunch, and after church, and we were at Subway, and we were ordering, and I said, okay, you guys, you're allowed to have a soft drink today, which is going to be a refill. You can go ahead and get it now, but your sandwich is going to be here for a little bit. So I'm telling you, don't drink the whole thing, because when you're food conscious person. And so we sat down, and you know that sound when you get to the end of your cup, and it's like, so I heard that, and I thought, okay, you can go. It's on. Sandwich comes, and sure enough, about a third of the way into it, Matt comes over, and if you have a whiner kid, you know what I'm talking about. You're bracing yourself inside, because you know it's coming. You know, big meltdown, hit the floor, crying, screaming, it's coming. And so I'm bracing myself inside because I'm about to say, no, you can't have anymore. And so he starts going on how thirsty he is. And I thought, okay, well, nothing else I've tried has worked. So I'm going to actually try some comfort. Remember what kind of how lame it is? Okay, how lame is it? But it was a big deal to him. So I said, wow, Matt, your throat must be so dry right now. And you must be so thirsty. I think it's hard to even like swallow the food. And I am so sad for you. But you want more soft drink, but you can't have any. Do you remember Mommy told you to not drink the whole thing? I'm just so sad for you because I care so much about you.